I started, I have my bachelor's degrees in astrophysics, physics, planetary science, and astronomy from the University of Colorado in Boulder, with a minor in geology there. And then I have my master's de degree in mechanical engineering. So I've always wanted to basically combine what I've studied with physics as well as my meditations to basically create technologies to take people back to the moon. Like, I don't see why we're not on the moon right now, you know?
And how did you find going through what's very often very refined channels of academia with these types of ideas? Obviously, you came into this type of sector in science with inspiration from your strange experiences as a child. So you already wanted to explore those types of ideas. Did you find that it was a accommodating environment or a restricting environment in regards to novel and disruptive ideas?
Yeah, I found it very restrictive. And I mean, that's one of the reasons why I'm not in the academic community so much right now, even though I do have affiliations with them. Like, I'm a member of the National Academy of Inventors. I do work with USF. I give lectures to their students. I've also given lectures to high schools, middle schools. I've given lectures to like innovation spaces at libraries. So just all over the place kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, and I heard this in your presentation, so maybe you've done other inventions, but you actually have a patent on a skateboard, right?
I have them, I have one right here I can show off. Basically, the thing that's unique about it is that it's literally the only skateboard in the world you can open. So it opens up and you can put your stuff inside of it.
Okay, that's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, this is a more advanced injection molded model. The first ones were handmade. And so because I went to college for like 7 years getting all those degrees basically. And I skated from class to class and I hated wearing the backpack. I don't like being
Right.
restricted by things that I need to hold, you know? And I decided to put my books inside my skateboard. And my professor at the time, his name was Franco Lodato, and he's the guy who invented the concept of multiple razors on a razor blade. He's the guy who put the rubber grip on a toothbrush. You know, he designed the first flat phone with Motorola called the Razor and
Right.
designed Ferraris. So basically, I was in his class and he saw my skate case and he was like, you need to patent that thing right now. And so I met with him after class every day, basically, and he showed me the patent process, how to do all that stuff. And so then I moved forward with it.
So you're kind of like this like skateboarding physicist who's trying to articulate spiritual messages through scientific language. Is that
That's a good way to put it, man. Like in one,
about right?
like yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I've been learning in my dreams since I was like 5, and so like all like telekinesis, telepathy, all that stuff is extremely real to me, right? But like growing up, you hear it's not real. So
Of course.
went and studied science in order to try to explain it as best as possible.
So it actually started really early for you having weird experiences, and that's what made you want to go into science.
Definitely, yeah.
Cool. Break it down for me. What happened? What was going on?
Well, I would have extremely vivid dreams to the point where it was the next day. Like there was no difference between my dream and the next day. I would wake up with a knowingness of how to accomplish a task that I have never done before. The earliest example is I learned to ride a bike in my dreams. I was training on a bicycle with training wheels, but then I woke up from a dream and I was like, I know how to ride a bike. I went straight to my brother. He was 7 at the time. He took the training wheels off my bicycle. I hopped on it and just rode in circles perfectly, like in the garage, right? And so then I went out to the street and rode, and I knew how to ride a bike, you know? So I've been learning like that. And so for me, like trusting my dreams has always been like an obvious thing, right? And that's not so obvious to a lot of other people. Like, trust your dreams, right? You can accomplish what you see in your dreams. Just.
There was recently, I don't know if you saw this, just kind of like a little side note. I thought it was such a cool article. They've apparently some scientists have managed to have a real-time dialogue with someone whilst they were in a lucid dream.
That's pretty awesome. I haven't seen that.
Yeah, I tweeted the article out. I was even thinking of doing a little video about it because I just thought that was a fascinating thing. Absolutely, trust your dreams. There's so much kind of symbology and things to be interpreted. They can also be very difficult to understand. So you obviously had some very clear kind of premonitory dreams from an early age.
Definitely.
Yeah. And has that continued through life?
Yes. Yeah, it has. And, yeah, no, it's continued through life to the point where like I'll wake up and I write out a whole book now, kind of thing.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting. This is something that I genuinely like to talk about. And I did a little talk about it recently, not necessarily dreams, but intuition in general, and just what intuition really is and how much it's impacted science, even though science disregards it a lot of the time. When people have intuitive eureka moments, usually that's the times where there's a bit of genius checkpointed within the scientific history. But you look at the way in which those people talk about those eureka moments, it's almost a spiritual thing, a divine inspiration, a message from something beyond themselves. And that's something that we disregard a lot, but this is the kind of thing that you're trying to talk about through scientific language, right?
Yeah, and I mean, even just to take that one step further, like how are there multiple discoveries happening that are the same discovery, but on different parts of the world at very similar timings, right? So that also comes out of it a little bit too.
And so have you, I mean, obviously you're looking within your scientific view on things, looking at technologies and looking at ways in which things can be developed. So are there other things that you've invented or other things that you're actually looking to invent outside of skateboards, you know?
I've worked in all kinds of different realms.
Okay.
My most famous project, and it's not my project, but a project I was highly involved with, like for maybe 7 years at this point, is called the Mansion Yachts. So
Okay.
they're stainless steel yachts that lift up on legs, and they're like 84 feet long, 40 feet wide, 3 stories tall. I just finished drawing up three different designs. They're 55 feet versions. So yeah, I mean, like that's like the engineering side of my
Yeah.
company. And they're self-sustainable, so they have solar panels on the top of them to charge up a battery bank that's inside of it. Yeah, full-size boats, like full-size kitchen, living space, all that kind of stuff. So that's like the most famous project that's out right now.
That's really cool. See, okay, so outside of like all of these pretty awesome little inventions that you're working on and companies that you're developing them with, you also wrote a book, The Infinite Pool of Experience and Awareness, which you also recently broke down in a really thorough and pretty scientifically dense, or at least in my opinion, scientifically dense presentation on your YouTube channel, which I really enjoyed listening to and taking notes. So I'm just wondering what inspired you to write that book and do the presentations?
Yeah, I mean, so I've been experiencing, you could say, phenomenal events my entire life, right? And so it's like, how do we actually put this into a context where people can understand what's happening? And so the very first book I wrote is called Your Influence in Space. So the Infinite Pool of Experience and Awareness is actually like six books put together into a hardback
Right,
anthology.
right.
I'm working on the second anthology now, which has a couple more books, but just to continue going. Basically, I wanted to be able to explain this stuff to a scientific community. And so I start off with Darwin's theory of evolution. So I literally step by step, and from Darwin's theory of evolution, we have something called sensory evolution, right? So where as we gain senses, we gain awareness. And when it comes to the human body, our most advanced sense is that of electromagnetism. It's literally our ability to see light. And because of that, scientists are stuck now. Like that's the furthest we've evolved. But now science is saying we can't see more, we can't do more. That's all that exists. Well, imagine if we never even had eyes and we only had ears. We would think that sound is the fastest speed. We would think that something called the sound hole, like a black hole, like a sound hole might exist. And so I think that that's one of the very most important things is that people understand that we have limitations as human beings to begin with. But what was the inspiration behind that? You could say I woke up from a dream on that book, like knowing I need to get this book out right now. And just to go off to explain that a little bit more. So basically, I wrote the whole book in like 2 days and then sent it for self-publishing. And I got 100 copies back. And I went to an art show to sell my skateboards, my books, and like some nunchucks. And,
Nice little mix of things there.
yeah, just my art, And while I'm at the art show, this one guy stops by and basically talks to me for about 2 hours, and then buys 20 copies of the book and invites me to join his green tech company called
Wow.
Bullet Tech. So within the time I wrote the book to the time he bought 20 copies was like 2 weeks, as far as the synchronicity there. And then he connected me to this group. His company was called Bullet Technologies. And what they had was they were working on a motor that you basically powered with water. So you pour water into it, the exhaust is cold, if the exhaust is water. And they had a working model on a lawnmower at the time. Yeah. So that project, yeah, I can go on, but yeah, let's just.
No. I'm really happy seeing, but all I was gonna say there was it just reminds me of the Stanley Myers story. I don't know if you're familiar with Stanley Myers.
I'm sure I've heard of it. If you could just kind of like
Yeah,
recap.
well, I can't remember the whole breakdown of the story, but he was a guy who was an inventor. He created apparently some sort of like hydrogen fuel cell engine that was running on water. It used a donut-shaped kind of toroidal style mini conductor, and through some form of electrolysis was breaking down the bonds and using it to make power. And then he was well, people believe he was assassinated. It's quite a well-known story about that guy. I think it was back in the
Was he here?
70s or 80s.
Was he in Florida?
I can't remember. He was American, so maybe Florida.
I do think there was a guy that was in Florida, and I think it might have even been Clearwater Beach, which is like 20 minutes from here. So there might be a connection there, but I'm not familiar with Stanley Meyer. I never met or anything like that.
Yeah, you should
But
look into it. It's an interesting case.
yeah, but that whole project kind of went, it disintegrated in a way when
Right.
before Havana Syndrome was even a thing, let me just put it that way.
Okay.
So, like, I think that if there are tactics and methods being used, they might have shifted their methods.
Oh,
Yeah.
see, so yeah, you think that maybe this was deliberately taken down then?
Potentially.
Hmm.
Wouldn't put, yeah, and I don't want to go too much into that, but potentially, yeah, there was
Potentially.
something.
Well, this is the thing with these types of disruptive technologies. I feel like there's a natural process of they're going to come out eventually, but there certainly seems to be interests that don't want that to happen because there is a lot of profit to be made off of the current system. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer, really.
Yeah, and that's something I saw in school as well. Like, why haven't I learned some of the sciences that do exist? Like electro is one good example. I know people that have masters in electrical engineering, PhDs. They've never even heard of electrogravitics, right? And I have my astrophysics degree. Why didn't it never came up once? And that was developed in what, 1908, something like that, 1912, by Thomas Townsend Brown. And so, like, why aren't those fields being presented in school, right?
Were these things that you were aware of during the time that you were actually going through academia, or did you discover these types of kind of almost like hidden physics or forbidden physics after the fact?
I've always been looking into anti-gravity, like research personally throughout my whole life. Yeah. So I saw it independently, you
Yeah.
know.
You
But like,
challenge a lot of lecturers in college.
well, that's exactly what you were just referring to earlier. Like, how did I feel going to school? It's best to kind of just be quiet sometimes and write the answer down and get the A. So that way,
Yeah, I get that. I get that. But you've taken your kind of academic background in science and you've applied it towards at least with this book and the series of books you've been working on and the presentations I've seen you do on your channel. You're trying to create a sort of a framework through which I guess spirituality or paranormal behavior and the resonance of emotion can be incorporated into a scientific understanding of our reality. So like as a person with no official academic background, this is something I've tried to do myself, to provide some sort of an explanation for certain phenomena that can be translated into a more modern, more scientifically directed form of language. But I lack the expertise required to fully translate these things. But you've got a far more scientifically trained mind, and you're applying this towards trying to understand the spirit of nature of our reality, which is exactly what I feel we need to do. I think that, people need to understand that spirit and science, or logic and intuition, and physics and metaphysics, I think are, at least in my opinion, in a process of kind of entangling with each other. We're in a process of becoming more symbiotic with each other, more balanced. So how exactly are you attempting to create this balance between, I guess, science and spirit? How are you viewing reality, and what do you want people to understand about it?
yeah, I mean, I think the important thing is to understand what science doesn't know first. Like, for me, it was what is gravity, right? They just defined it with an equation. Like, you literally, I think it was Newton sitting under a tree, sees the apple fall, and he's like, "That's gravity." But what is gravity? There's no answer. There's no good answer. And then it's like, what is causing the universe to expand? There's no good answer. What was the source of the Big Bang? There's no good answer. So like there's a lot of things we assume and we just keep going off of them, right? And so for me, it was breaking everything down to the fundamentals, and really showing people step-by-step logic to say, well, hey, maybe the universe isn't really expanding. The speed of light is just a limitation to human perception, and we live in this greater world. Like, it's kind of like the premises, you know, that you can move forward from. And that's why I use scientific terms like and thinking like Darwin's theory of evolution. So now if we evolved from a single celled organism, do science when you're a single cell, what does the world look like? Right. We'd have no clue. Now do science when all you have is smell and taste. Now do your science when all you have is sound. Now do your science when you have vision. So like we keep building these tools that enhance our vision. You know, like we're detecting longer and shorter wavelengths of sound, but we don't even know what tools or what senses we haven't developed, right? So for when scientists say that this is everything and this is all, that already right there just should show people, well, hey, we've evolved from a single cell. And as we gain senses, we gain awareness, right? So to say that the light is the fastest thing ever, well, I don't necessarily agree with that. It's the fastest source of information exchange for the human body, I think is a more accurate statement. And to move forward from that type of thinking, you know, you can come up with different solutions. For example, like, why is the universe expanding? Well, is the universe really expanding from every moment in space and time? Or are our perceptions being stretched and crunched based off of Einstein's theory of relativity? Because if you think that right now, the current accepted physics, right, is the universe is expanding. But there was a moment when we used to stand on Earth and we would look at the sun and we say, hey, sun goes around the Earth. From Earth, the sun goes around the Earth. Like when we're looking up from the Earth, the sun goes around it. But now when you go out into space and you look at the whole system, well, the Earth might be actually orbiting the sun. So it's a very similar thing. It's our perspective. And so from every point in space and time now, we say, hey, the universe is expanding. Well, Einstein's theory of relativity shows us that all energetic relationships are relative to your current inertial reference frame. So like your frame of motion, the gravitational field you're undergoing, as well as your velocity. And that creates your frame of motion. So all the matter that we see essentially is in the same frame of motion as us. And you could say that's our dimension, is our frame of motion. But one thing to note is that the human perception is limited by a factor of the speed of light. So we can't see past the cosmic microwave background, and we can't see into black holes. Mm-hmm. So it's one time the speed of light outward, as well as one time of the speed of light inward. We're literally seeing a specific distance from the center of time. That's our dimension. That's the energy we're interacting with. And when you put all of it in a state of orbit, because humans orbit the Earth, right? It's like our bodies, our matter, all orbits the center of the Earth. All of that orbits the center of the sun. All of that orbits the center of a galaxy. At that point, we think the universe is expanding. Well, there's good evidence now that, well, maybe we live in a black hole instead. So instead of the universe expanding, maybe our entire galaxy is orbiting something even faster. And there's an even faster orbit and a faster orbit. And at the end of the day, there's the center of all moments. And you could say that our entire physical experience is a relationship to that center of all moments. And when you look at it like that, it opens things up a little bit to where you can have different densities of creation. And we live at a specific distance, a specific, in quotes, density, electromagnetic density from the center of a black hole. And so it's a way to actually start to define some of those terms that we hear in the literature too, like densities of beings, like what is that, right? So I mathematically describe how to define densities. And so I think that's one of the fundamental differences between the model that I present versus current accepted models.
So one of the things I'm picking up here is that we are at least at some point now evolutionarily restricted by our limited senses and our kind of necessity to rely upon just the electromagnetic spectrum and the light that we receive, and that if we were perhaps in a process of developing and refining better senses that would allow us to see more into the future, allow us to see more of reality. Is that essentially what you're trying to say, is that we may be in a state of evolution that's going to incorporate further senses as we go forward?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think with every new kind of sense comes a new realm to explore. And right now, I believe that we're somewhat discovering the quantum sense. I know that's a very woo term, but like the quantum sense. And what does that even mean? And it means our sense of potentiality. And the way I like to describe that is, as we evolve from a single cell, at first there was wall, no wall. Like that would be our science. Then it's like wall, no wall, tastes good, tastes bad. But now we're at a point where there's light, no light. But our most advanced sense is our ability to synchronize with the future events that are happening. And so it's almost our sense of love. No love if I go in this direction, or love if I go in that direction. And so, as far as human body's greatest sense, I think it's that of potentiality.
I like that you said this in your presentation, and I made a note of it because I wanted to bring it up. So I'm glad you did. I like this whole thing of love or no love. It becomes a very simple potentiality of two choices. And really, that is, at least that's how I would see life, is that you really do have two choices. Are you going to respond to a situation with love or not with love? So the way that you're making it seem like it's almost like the most refined system of choice now within this species is interesting. I've never heard someone kind of try and bring it into that type of framework before. It's interesting.
Yeah, and I mean that really circles it back into it's not in this book, it's the first book in the second volume. It's called The Physics of Love, and it talks about the synchronous how your energy synchronizes with those less dense and more dense realms to create your fluid experience. Because at the end of the day, all of our wants, don't wants, assumptions, and expectations need to synchronize with each other to create a fluid experience. But that's just within our dimension. But when it comes to gravity, you could say that that's almost the wants and wills of a being that's in a less dense realm. And there, I have drawings of all this stuff too, but like, say we live in the center, we live in a black hole and we're only experiencing a certain dimension, like a certain distance away. Thing about black holes is that energy drifts inwards. And so as the energy is drifting inwards, beings that exist in those less dense realms distort the space-time before it even interacts with our dimension. And so they somewhat guide the pacing motions of our lives. And in return, we create distortions within our layer that affect the denser realms.
Now, this is just like throwing it out into speculation, but do you feel that beings on lower density levels, or what might be kind of translated, even though maybe not necessarily how it would make sense in physics, but the new age spiritualists might say it's higher dimensional beings on that level, do you think that there is an actual evolutionary process taking place throughout kind of dimensional space, that we're on a certain level of progression as these physical beings, and that these are potentially the next step in evolution? It's even a less dense state, a less physical state. They don't need to manifest as a body. I know I'm taking it a little bit far out, but is that kind of a direction you lean in?
It actually does lead into that direction. And that has a lot to do with processional alignments, but not of physical world, because we have our consciousness, right, that does its own motions. And then we have a physical body. And then we have a body that's tuned to consciousness, is the way I like to see it. So the body is more of a receiver of an antenna, but it exists within this fluid black hole, right? And you could say this black hole, the vortex of all moments, would be the conscious field. And depending on how far away you are from the center of it is what kind of frequencies you'd be picking up on. And so when it comes to evolution, I've noticed that there's a relationship to a precessional cycle. And what I mean by that is our brains, the human body, is basically tuned to waves, delta to fast gamma. And in order for a brain to properly be functioning, all that energy needs to be harmonized. It needs to be synchronized in a fashion to where there's smooth brain harmony. And when you consider this view of the fifth dimensional vortex, this black hole, every single frequency that manifests within our dimension stems from either an orbit or a pendulating motion. And so one way to think of it is that your delta wave is literally existing at a certain distance away from the center of a black hole. Your theta wave is existing at a certain distance away from the center of a black hole. And each one of these fractal in to be 1/4 the diameter. But so basically you realize your conscious experience is made of these six different energies that are synchronized within the fifth dimension. And so when you do, I have drawings of all this. So when you put them into tidal locking, basically you can realize, So tidal locking means like the delta would orbit one time for every two times the theta wave orbits. The alpha orbits four times, the beta orbits eight times. And when you map out the circadian rhythm of the human through this dimension of conscious density, you end up realizing it mimics a gyroscope hanging on a string at a 90-degree angle. And so that's our daily precession related to a one-day orbit within this fluid, like our day. When you expand that those tidally locked fluids of conscious perception outward and inward, you see that there's dimensional alignments that exist. And during those dimensional alignments, there's great precessions of conscious experience, meaning our consciousness will literally be tugged into less dense realms when these precessions happen.
And okay, and how do you feel that would be translated on a human perceptual level, being torn into less dense realms? What does that translate to someone living a life?
That would be like the sense, that's our quantum sense in a way, because a lot of UAP stem from the theta field. Like a lot of them happen at 10:30 at night, 2:30 in the morning. It's related to the whole witching hour thing. And our daily precession brings us out into a delta experience. So we go through theta, we hit delta, but then we spiral back inwards toward the center, we come back out to delta. But during the precessional alignments, that entire orbit gets tugged outward a little bit more. And so our awake state would be more harmonized with the theta fields that exist and the delta fields that exist. And so those are less dense realms. And so when it comes to perceiving a manifested experience, that's why I always circle it back to the Star of David here at this point, where it's like maybe the Star of David was a dimensional alignment that created somewhat like of a tugging of conscious perception. We were able to actually harmonize with less dense realms. And so that would look like a light, a very specific places. And so that's potentially how that aligns with that. And then what you realize is that there's those precessional cycles. One is at a day, one's at 185 days, the next one's around 2,100 years-ish, which seems to be the alignment that we're currently near. And it relates. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to interject just to say, well, this is what, is translated as the age of Aquarius or the awakening or the enlightenment of the human species. This is how we translate it, but you're saying that there is a kind of a cyclical science to this as well.
Definitely. And it definitely translates into the starting of the age of the Aquarius, or like the ushering in of the age of the Aquarius. And that has and so that precession will pull all human conscious experiences out into this less dense realm. It's Earth is still Earth, but as far as perceiving energies and relationships, like you'll be able to perceive a less dense realm during this time.
Are you familiar with Terence McKenna?
I've heard the name, but I've tried to remain as dumb as possible at the same time while listening to a lot of stuff,
I think he'd love talking to you if he was still alive, because he has similar ideas about where we're moving towards. Well, I mean, his whole thing was that there is some sort of basin of attraction at the end of time, that we're being drawn towards something. So instead of being pulled, sorry, instead of being pushed by forces through revolution, we're being pulled by some sort of kind of attractor at the end of time that's bringing things towards it. And it's almost like a conclusion or a singularity or a point where all things connect. And you could almost say that, moving into different densities or states that you can't perceive normally, this could be seen as moving closer towards that basin of attraction where everything's kind of bursting out from this one creative singularity.
Yeah, no, it might be hard for some people to see, but like, and it this circles back almost to what we were talking about in the very beginning, but the lucidity of the dream. Why are some people more lucid than others when they go into dream state? And for me, that has everything to do with your golden spot. And what I mean by that, it's like your strongest stance in all three aspects: mind, body, and spirit. And if you get pulled off too far into a fractal of human delusion, human creations, you become very disconnected from the natural flows of reality themselves. And so when you go into dreamland, as your energy starts to orbit back towards dreamland, your conscious mind will turn off because you're not tuned to it. And basically your dreams will then guide you back to that laminar flow, and then be able to connect to you. So like by removal of ego, you synchronize to the incoming energies properly. But what's interesting about the concept of a converging moment is that during those great precessions, we're getting tugged so fast out into those less dense realms that holding a posture of delusion, like of a want, of a don't want, assumption or expectation, almost acts like sails. And they'll cause you to spiral into a delusion during those tuggings. But the thing is you, people only, can only spiral so far before they go back to that laminar flow. And when you get tugged all the way out there, it basically is like a stripping of all your wants, don't wants, assumptions, and expectations, which ultimately creates one synchronized experience for all of us to have, where we've all removed our delusions. So it's almost like a tugging into this less dense realm. And when that happens, you can't have any of these little bits of rust hanging off of you because you won't properly harmonize into that field.
Yeah, and this would be maybe seen as the stripping of the ego or the stripping of the self, and which, funnily enough, I mean, this is something that fascinates me, is the level of correlation between, I guess, like the dream world, the realms of the imagination, the psychedelic realms as well, because there is a sense of losing yourself, or a dissolution of your ego or your preconceptions, especially on obviously strong psychedelic experiences like ayahuasca and DMT and things like this. And it makes me wonder if the imagination, the psychedelic realm, if these things are actually a dimensional space, and that you do get access to this through, because I would like to see the human being almost like a biological quantum computer, that we're some sort of way to interface with this reality, but there's probably settings and modalities within this computer that we just haven't truly unlocked, or we've forgotten. But the imagination, and then taking it a step further when you go into transcendental or psychedelic experiences and things like that, it makes me think that the imagination is more like there's a bridge between this physical being and some kind of hyperdimensional space. And that hyperdimensional space is translated to us as the imagination. And it's this thing where language and objects and things can be created, and then we just manifest it into reality. I almost feel like we're channeling from another space, another dimension. So would you say that the kind of psychedelic realms, the dream realms, the imaginary realms, maybe are not so imaginary?
I would say that's our biggest hint that we need to follow. And that's like we were kind of talking about earlier, like what is the next sense that we have ability to access? And it's our quantum, like the sense, mm-hmm. now we're in this quantum realm. And we notice that if you're in a delta or theta state, you're basically dreaming. So delta is like deep sleep. Theta is like dreamland or meditation land. We can only perceive the waking universe if we're in an alpha, beta, or slow gamma state of consciousness. When we hit fast gamma, now we've already jumped into that next like density. So those are all conscious densities. Delta is the biggest ring of perception. Theta is the next ring. Wake state harmonizes with the body, right? And that's alpha, beta, and slow gamma. And then you have fast gamma, which is a denser creation. So I think that fast gamma is basically a really big clue, because that's what happens when people have near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, DMT trips, all of that stuff. They're in fast gamma. And so when it comes to frequencies and just like the brain, there's that doubling nature, because from delta to theta, you multiply it by two. So a 2.5 hertz wave is a delta wave. Multiply that by two, now you're in theta, that's five. Multiply that by two, you're in alpha, that's 10. Multiply that by two, you're in beta, that's 20. Slow gamma is 40, fast gamma is 80. I think that gives us a pretty big hint or indication that the next realm or layer of experience would be near 160 hertz of brainwave activity. The one next behind that would be 320, 640, 1280, keeps going. And that's denser experiences. And when we're passing away, we hit that 80 hertz, we're going closer to those denser realms. And the same is true in the opposite, where we have theta and delta as dreamland, less dense realms. And you could divide your delta by two and just keep dividing by two. And right. that goes, so you can go close to zero hertz all the way at the edge of the black hole, or close to infinity all the way at the center of the black hole. And so we have alpha, beta, and slow gamma, which is a very specific distance as far as conscious experience within this dimension of density.
Yeah, so we're operating on an extremely thin slice of possibility.
It's like our visible spectrum compared to the entire electromagnetic spectrum, yeah. right? Like from literally infinitely small to infinitely big, we've got the visible spectrum, which is right in the middle. You could say it's the same within the conscious spectrum, where the human body is literally got this little band of experience. but it extends all the way to infinity in both directions, infinitely close to zero and infinitely close to infinity, right?
So, do you think this is going to be the next revolution in science, like within our lifetimes, within the next couple of decades? Is, you know, as long as we don't fall apart and blow the planet up, are we going to be, in your opinion, delving deeper into the physics and the mechanics of consciousness and how that might apply to, you know, technologies and innovations and obviously just models for reality?
Definitely. And it has a lot to do with, I think our first big step, though, is like a revolution in physics, understanding that maybe the universe isn't expanding. Maybe we live in a black hole. I think that's the first step. And then basically, now how do you make technologies based off of that kind of concept? And that leads straight into what I would call interdimensional technologies, where you're literally moving through that black hole. Instead of moving within our dimension, we're moving within that black hole. And how does that translate into an experience? Well, moving like 1 inch within that black hole is like jumping to the stars already. Moving 1 inch horizontally is like going into the past or into the future. So I really do think it comes down to like that will be the next step. But before we're now, maybe this is what they're trying to guide us to, as far as like the UAP, they're trying to guide us to a certain understanding that before we can start to use these technologies, we need to understand how we influence denser realms of creation and less dense realms of creation. Because if we're going to start traveling through those different dimensions and doing all that kind of stuff, we need to be aware of what we're doing when we go there. It's kind of like you can't just take a speedboat out into the middle of the ocean if you've never been boating, right? You want to just cross the ocean. You need to be aware of the ocean, the waves, what happens when you're on the water. So I think an important step right now is an education process, educating people about how our bodies actually influence denser realms and less dense realms.
Do you feel that UFOs are from our material, specific physical realm, or do you think that they are, at least maybe some of them, because it's probably a spectrum, but do you think that maybe some of them are a manifestation from some sort of higher dimension or a less dense state, and they're coming into this denser state?
It's definitely a combination, in my opinion, right? Just to make that clear. It's definitely a combination of both. And I'm more leaning towards the ultra terrestrial kind of thought process. Like they're within, that's where it gets kind of funny. Just the idea of space time itself, I just think we see it fundamentally wrong. Like our perceptions are being stretched away. So the stars are literally like an inch away in that dimension of conscious density. So I really don't think they're coming from other planets. I think they're coming from different dimensions within time. And when it comes to what types of beings, I think the less dense beings aren't of a concern from groups I've spoken with. They're more
In
concerned
terms
about.
of ethics and morals and things like that.
Yeah, you could say that they're very harmonious. I don't want to. They're the harmonious, they're the nice beings. But when it comes to stuff that could potentially be a threat, that would be coming more from the denser realms, which are a result of human stillness. You could consider it like the now future, or you could consider it distortions of the human body.
That's interesting. That's an interesting way of saying it. Was this something that someone said to you? Someone special?
Through synchronicity, through a lot of events, I meet a lot of people basically. And one of the events I was at this guy's house, and I don't want to use names here.
No.
I was at his house, and basically we started talking about UAP, UFOs. He's definitely in the Black Project world, high up in there. And we started talking about my interdimensional telescope concept. And I was like, well, you could. And just very briefly during the conversation, I was like, well, you can look into the denser realms or you can look into the less dense realms. And his just gut instinctual reaction was, why would you ever want to look into the less dense realms? That's not the problem. They're coming from the denser realms. Like that was his gut instinct reaction. And so from that alone, it was like, they don't even care about the less dense realms. What people are worried about now is the denser creations coming out into our layer.
Yeah, well, you know, that makes perfect sense to me. I mean, it makes sense to me personally. It's you know, taking it away from just physics and science, if you're thinking about lower dimensional beings, I mean, you know, we're not exactly perfect. So something lower than us, I mean, yeah, I don't know if I really want to be meeting something that's on a lower developmental process than a human being, because human beings can scare me quite a lot. So I think that that makes sense, that there could be things that you wouldn't want to meet on that level. It also, it kind of strengthens my own intuition, and I don't know how much you know about my channel or my experiences, but I have had experiences with the phenomenon, and those experiences took place because I got into a calm meditative state, put myself into a positive, loving emotional resonance, and was out in my back garden basically just firing off thoughts into the universe based on those types of intentions and emotional states. It was successful. It's the reason why Project Unity exists, is because I had these experiences and it made me go, oh my God, something is real and it responds, and this can be done. And I truly feel that whatever these things are that you reach out to through those types of methods that incorporate a resonance of love, of peace, of good nature, of nothing but kind of like your highest ideals, and you're projecting that with the intention of being matched in kind by some form of intelligence, I think that that is the less dense state intelligences that are coming and interacting. You know, I get a lot of people saying, I recently did a presentation on my thoughts on like the mechanics of that type of contact, just some layman science, but trying my best to give it a framework that makes a little bit more sense, a bit like you, but without all of the verbiage and the language that you've picked up, because I don't have that type of skill set. But I tried my best to outline it in that sense. And you still get people who are saying, this sounds so dangerous, this sounds like a really, you know, ill-advised thing to do. Why, you know, you might attract something negative. And just leading on from what you said, it just feels to me that's true, that when you reach these types of states, you're not interacting with denser forms of intelligence, you're interacting with something of a higher order.
So I would agree with that, but the same sense, you could also potentially be interacting with those denser ones, and it really comes down to, you could say, your meditation methods. And so how I like to see it, if you connect with like Earth and you connect with sun, moon, like the natural flows of our space-time, you're most likely going to be connecting with those nicer beings, right? The smarter ones, the ones that are trying to help you out. But if your interactions come about because of a really tight pacing motion, like sometimes you're struggling with something mentally and you're really doubtful and all of a sudden paranormal stuff starts happening, I would say that's the denser realms that are pulling out. And just one thing I want to bring up is the concept of a delusion itself. Because from a moment of pure zero, we can make any choice and do anything we want. And say for a drug addict, right? Their spiral into the future is literally like a 30-minute spiral. That's their line of sight. They can only see 30 minutes. And so when you think about the fluid of time and just how energy spirals and creations, it's a habitat. You're creating a tight habitat of a 30-minute spiral. And different beings like to live in different parts of a river. Right. So you've got some fish like where the water moves fast, some fish like where the water moves slow. So based off of the postures you hold that have solidified in your mind and in your body, walk, for example, I could walk around thinking that all Democrats are the best, or all Republicans are the best, or because I have this much money, I do this, or I'm this race, I do that. So those are all postures that solidify within the body. And each one of those is a projection you're creating, and you're trying to synchronize with future events. And so like, basically each one of those is like, becomes a habitat. And so we create habitats for beings to evolve within. And that's what comes out of the books. And it's wild at first, but—
No, I love it. I love this so much. Please keep talking.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you see that like we create habitats for these denser beings to exist within, based off of the pacing motions of our lives. And so— if you're connecting to the sun, the moon, stars like that, you're probably seeing a being of a less dense realm because you're super connected. But if you're caught up in a fractal of human delusion, really tight spirals, you're probably creating habitats for beings to evolve within, because there's also time dilations that exist between the dimensions, to where like, if you zoom down and become a Planck-sized consciousness, to where you're like literally the size of a Planck-sized being, just the fact of me waving my arm would take an eternity to unfold within that perception. And so quite literally, there's time dilations in, within these things too, to where by holding a posture of anger or a grudge, there could be like a million years of evolution within that.
Wow.
Or a billion. You get what I'm saying there?
Yeah, no, I'm like, dude, my mind's racing with so many thoughts because I'm like, I need to ask questions. And I'm just like, keep listening, keep listening. This is great. I've never had someone explain it this way before. And I really like it because it, I don't know, there's something about this that would make sense to me. And I can see why Lou Elizondo took such an interest in your breakdown of like the way in which these intelligences might be operating, because he seems to truly believe that this exists within, to quote him literally, the nexus between quantum mechanics and consciousness. And yeah, this idea that there can be intelligences that exist within time dilated folds of your own experiences, and that maybe, I guess you could say, this is leading into you saying that this is what people see as the law of attraction, when you've got negative or positive attracting things coming into your life, that perhaps it's you staying within that habitat and that's causing certain effects within your own waking experience.
Yeah, I mean, I find it super fascinating. And just to bring up Lou Elizondo, like for a second, he was one of the only I've talked about this kind of stuff with a lot of people, but like him and I were able to flow. It was like, yeah, so is the universe actually expanding? And he was like, I don't know. You know, like he was already pretty much on board with all that stuff. And what I found super interesting about that conversation we had was how he circled it all the way back to the book, The Physics of Love. Talking about bits of rust that get held on to people, how we hold on to these delusions. It seemed to circle all the way back to that at the end of the conversation. So like, I don't think it's too far out there. You know, I think it's almost pretty on point. Whether or not the math is perfect is a different thing, but as far as conceptually what could be happening, I think it's there.
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean,
Yeah.
it's a really kind of out there suggestion, but for some reason it just makes a lot of sense in my own way of looking at things. It's like, yeah, I could incorporate that. If someone managed to objectively prove that that was the case, I'd be like, yeah, I can see that, that there are beings that live in almost time streams. And like you said, and I like the way you described it, in certain places, like some creatures like to live on this little part of the river and some like to favor this spot. And it's like, yeah, why would we assume that everything's just in this one environment that we're operating in? They might be in all these little kind of pockets and slices of the environment that we can't see. We, again, going back to what we were saying earlier, are so restricted by our senses, and so we don't have the ability to perceive all of these different things. Perhaps this is where technologies can actually be developed that pierce through the lens and pierce through into these other dimensional spaces, allow us to look into them in greater detail. And I guess, like you would say, that that's where we're trying to head, right?
Yeah, I think that is where we're trying to head, but I think it's also important that people understand what's happening when we're using those technologies. Like we're literally tunneling into a denser realm of creation or a less dense realm. I think that's an important aspect of it. But that alone is why I introduced the concept of the magic square, which I first came across by studying John Searle's work. But it shows how within a square or a sphere, you can basically have infinite creations that all add up to a certain frequency, is the easiest way to put it. So you could, in an empty volume of space, there can be infinite creations all existing, all harmonizing to make one fluid motion that we would never even see from our dimension. So there's basically pockets all over the place, is a really easy way to put it. Yeah, so I think that the magic square technology is going to end up being something that gets used.
So can you kind of expand on what magic square technology means?
It would be a way to zoom into different fractals of experience. In a wave sense, in an energetic sense, you could say for every one square, you could break it into four, right? And so for every one bit of information, it can be broken into four bits of information. That same square can be broken into 16 bits of information. It can be broken into what's 32, then 64. You can keep dividing your square up more and more and more and more to where you can have infinite energies existing within a space, but they all add up to be a harmonious number on the outside. The thing that's special about the magic square is no matter which way you add up all the numbers, every diagonal, every vertical, every horizontal, every four corner sets, they all add up to the same exact number, which essentially is the ultimate, what's the leftover frequency almost. So from our dimension, our perception, we would only see the leftover frequency, which might end up looking like nothing. But within the square, you could, it's literally like a tunnel
Just infinite realities and
of infinite realities existing within it. And I do have drawings of this stuff if, you know, people want to look into it a little bit more. But what's so interesting to me is how that ends up being also the foundation of like sigil magic, and how this ends up circling back into the concept of magique or magic, you know, like with the J, where you're basically creating structures in our dimension that influence beings of less dense and more dense realms to do your bidding, right? And that almost circles all the way back to like, when did UAP first come? Where are they coming from? Are they people that are generating them from these denser realms? It really circles back into a lot of that stuff, but I try to stay away from the politics aspect of it and just stick to the science, like, and philosophy of what could be happening.
Speaking of circling back, what do you think about crop circles? I mean, obviously there's a lot of ones that are probably fake, but do you think that there are real ones? And what do you think about the kind of geometrics that are being displayed there?
Yeah, I find them super fascinating. I haven't personally done enough research into them, but there does seem to be like some type of message that's trying to be presented, right? So some form of communication. And if you're in a less dense realm and you're trying to communicate to these denser beings, maybe that's one way you would do it. You draw pictures on the earth and hope they figure it out.
Well, this is what a few people think is that they're almost kind of shadows of higher dimensional objects, that you've got this 2D imprint of something that may be a structure in a different density, but is projected in a different way on our plane of reality. I don't know what to think about crop circles, but there are definitely some compelling ones, and it does make me wonder what exactly the purpose or the method is.
I feel like they're put there intentionally. I don't think they're an accidental byproduct.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's too many differences between the patterns and the kind of intricacy of them, and it seems to be by design. And there's actually some really interesting ones where they all add up to pi and like kind of equations that are embedded into them. And so yeah, I mean, crop circles might be one of those little aspects to look at when it comes to what are they trying to say to us, and is it maybe hints at the mechanics of our reality. This is again a layman looking at this, and I just think, oh well, in physics you've got geometrics, and in psychedelic experiences you've got geometrics, transcendental experiences, the same kind of things turn up. Is this some sort of nod towards the frequency specific geometric mathematically generated underpinnings of reality? Is there some sort of message coming through there?
I totally hear what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. How would you define spirit as a scientist looking at this from a physics perspective? What is a soul or a spiritual self to you? How would you try and explain it to people?
That's going to be the book I write after. I'm writing a book called Mind right now. The next one's going to be called Body. The next one's going to be called Spirit, and it's spirit dash the vortex of creation. So I would say that spirit is essentially the energy of that creates you. It's almost all, everything is spirit in a sense. And when it comes to the energy that creates you, well, it starts from the beginning of time and it spirals all the way to the center of time. And our experience of the physical body is only a specific distance from the center of time. So in that sense, your spirit exists throughout all time. Your energy exists throughout all time. The energy that actually creates you exists throughout all time. And you can do something called an interdimensional alignment, where you align yourself with your past and future selves, and that way you can transfer information through that. And that's what I call a golden chain of reincarnated beings. Because basically, through your mind, body, spirit postures, you realize that you get caught into fractals of delusion. And if you're building off delusion, you're basically drifting further and further away from your zero point, your natural spiral of energy that creates your body. I call it the faucet of creation.
I like
Like
it. I like it.
your body is being focused into a specific spot based off of the wants and wills of a less dense realm. Then within our realm, we've got our pacing motions that influence denser realms. But basically, if you align yourself properly with the pacing motions of those less dense realms, you've now aligned yourself with the incoming flow of your body, of your own creation. From there, you can actually basically link up in a way to where you exist across all time at once. And so spirit, in my opinion, is the energy of your creation, right? And that's just how I like to define spirit. And then it translates a lot into ego, or what I call light state harmony. So it's like your ability to go with the flow almost. And if you're a person that holds a lot of ego, then when that natural energy comes into you, you're going to create a lot of distortions. And so I would say that's like a bad light state harmony. It's not very in tune with the incoming energy. So your spirit is going to be not very powerful. But when you align with that incoming flow and you remove your ego and you go with that flow, now you have a really strong light state harmony where you're actually connected to the flows of creation itself. It's kind of like listening to the wants and wills of the less dense realms.
I like that. I like that. Do you feel that there is, I mean, do you have like a kind of almost like an animism model for the way reality is? Do you think that everything is aware, all things are conscious in their own way, and that there is maybe like a kind of like a sum total, what people would call a god, like a sum total of all consciousness?
Yeah, and I would say that's like that vortex of creation, the biggest vortex of all of it. But then it's like, what started that vortex? What starts that next layer? So at the end of the day, there's something that started something.
At the end of the day, there's something that started something. Yeah, that's it. That's the quote of humanity right
I always joke with my brother. I believe it was God that did it. You
there.
know, like. If you go infinitely small to infinitely dense, like it just keeps going. But what's interesting is when you look at all that from above, it's like the magic square. It looks like nothing. It's almost like the yin and yang perfectly canceled out. So it's all existing within nothing.
Do you feel that reality can eventually be explained by humans, or do you feel that our attempts to kind of articulate and understand it are just ways to keep ourselves busy trying to solve an impossible problem?
I think we're trying to solve an impossible problem. I mean, it even comes across in the literature when when people talk, like UAP experiencers talk to people, they're like, this is the understanding these beings have. You know, this is the understanding these. So even the most advanced messengers still only have like an
Tiny
idea.
little, yeah.
Yeah, they don't know. Yeah. Like what started everything? They don't know.
I think I read something recently where they were saying the consensus now is that the Big Bang didn't even happen, and that there is they're looking at completely different models. This is always something that made me laugh. I just think, and you talked about this as well, basing a lot of our models for reality on essentially guesswork and principles of ignorance, really. I mean, what can we do? We're one evolving monkey species on one planet flying through space, so we can only do our best, but we are building a lot of our kind of models and foundations and infrastructures on best guesses that are being disproven as we continue on through science. So it is getting to that point now where it feels that there is a major reshuffling of the consensus of the status quo in physics, in reality. And obviously the UAP discussion, and I agree with you, I feel like the UAP discussion is a symptom of this, and this is going to be one of those aspects that is brought in that challenges humanity but allows us to see a little bit further forward into this potentially infinite fractal that is that is the universe.
Yeah, I mean, I don't buy into the Big Bang at all anymore. I literally made a video. It's like the Big Bang makes no sense, was the title of the video. And it's literally because our perceptions are being stretched out and they're being crunched. It's really challenging to see, but like the edge of the smooth cosmic microwave background is just where the flow of space-time equals the speed of light again. So we can't see that far. We can't see that far out, and we can't see into black holes. So it's like literally the limitation of our dimension, of our electromagnetic relationships. Yeah. So I don't really buy the Big Bang anymore. I think that we all exist within a point, within a black hole, and that as you orbit, you would see that half we have past and future. So our perception is literally one half past, one half future overlapping to create a now moment. And when you look at it like that, so you could say our future, as energy comes into our future, that the space between the center of time and our position is actually getting crunched to us, and then everything is being stretched away. But then as we leave that point in space-time, it all reverts back to normal. So the energy that makes the physical matter of our galaxies that we see has already passed through our bodies and is circling back to us. It's our perceptions being warped, stretched and crunched, and an overlapping of one half past and one half future. And as you fractal in and get as close as you can to the now moment, it's always one half past and one half future.
Yeah, this is kind of what you were explaining with the train, like the train analogy, right? In your presentation about you'd hear the sound of it going past you, but obviously on the train you're just hearing a stable sound. So that's you in the zero point, right, on the train.
Yeah, I mean, we exist between one half past and one half future, always moving forward through mm-hmm. time, apparently, kind of thing. And so, like, half the matter gets crunched to you, half it gets stretched away, and then in the past, it all reverts back to normal. And that's why when it comes to, like, dark matter relationship to the amount of matter within the universe, they like to say that there's 5 parts per dark matter for every 1 part of matter. And it's like, well, it's not necessarily that it's dark matter or hidden. It's within dimensions that aren't within our perception. And we're only catching the matter within 2 spots of that orbit.
Yeah, so we're, again, in a very slim, thin slice of perception. Have you ever made attempts to... Obviously, you're a practiced meditator and you've had that discipline for some time, right? Have you got kind of like different... disciplines of meditation that you've practiced over time?
It has constantly evolved over time. And like I don't know if we were talking about in the beginning, I've kind of been learning in my dreams mm-hmm. for a long time. And so I would pick up my next meditation lesson in my dreams. Like the thing that needs to be accomplished that throughout my day in order to, you know, stay true to myself, you could say. And one of the lessons that I found fascinating and other people might find fascinating too was basically learning to walk the line. Like the solid line of yourself. And what I mean by that is we can make infinite choices. We can do anything we want, but there's like the greatest you that exists, like the you with the most potential. And that walk is a fine line to be your greatest self. And so for the actual lesson, the meditation lesson, there's a handrail that is, it's about a 20-minute walk to the end of the pier and back. And so I would get on the handrail, which is about a 6-inch handrail, and I would get my double nunchucks and like do my double nunchuck routine while walking the whole handrail. And the idea behind it is that it's really daunting if you look at the entire path of where you need to go. But if you just focus on your next step, the next step is obvious. It's 1 foot in front of the other and you keep going and you walk that line. And so I think for me, that was a really important lesson. Like the next step of faith, you could say, is obvious. You don't need to know the whole path. You don't need to know everything, but you already know and you already have a gut instinct to that next step. So for me, it's always like the next step is obvious. And I felt that was a very important lesson.
So with your dreams, is this all kind of in terms of the way in which you're having these realizations when you're having these kind of dreams, is there a linguistic component? Is there someone saying things, or is this situational environments where you're kind of realizing something through engaging in this situation?
Yeah, no, I think both. Like the example me riding a bicycle was clearly I was trying to learn how to ride a bike as a kid. But then you kind of learn to use this skill to your advantage. And so you can go to bed with an idea or a thought in your head, and then you'll get the answer while you're sleeping. And it is very direct, very obvious. Like I end up physically doing everything I need to do in order to find the answer. So I wake up with not only with a knowing in my mind, but a feeling in my body of how to perform the motion. So it's not only like a thought, it's also an action. Wake up knowing how to do an action. And I call that your light state. It's the harmony within your body that allows you to make those motions. For example, like the perfect punch or the perfect kick, like you know, to feel your body and to have that type of memory is a different memory. Than just like knowing a topic. That's completely different, you know? So.
And you meditate every day?
I got to a point where I stopped meditating. Because like in order to communicate with people, you have to be on the same plane.
It's like, I got to cut this shit out, man. It's getting a little bit too much.
Well, the last time I did it, it's a lot of it has to do with dissolving of the ego, right? The self. And it's like, okay, I'm human. I am this. I am this. The last time I did it, I got to a point where it was, I am vortex of energy. And it was at that point you start to dissolve away into the ether. And it was like, no, no, no. I want my body back. I like having my body. Please.
Wow, man. You took, yeah. So, okay. So do you not have a practice of meditation anymore, then that's something that you've stopped.
Well, yeah, and for me, it's like once you've seen it, you can't unsee it. Once you hear it, you can't unhear it. And a lot of that relates back to an experience I had when I was about 10 years old, actually, probably the most vivid memory I have as a child, where I was in a state of meditation and a being came in front of me and taught me the delusions of mankind.
Wow.
Like,
Also, 10 years old. You started young meditating.
yeah,
Wow.
I started when I was, I noticed like I had dreams. And I wanted to like expand upon the concepts because I always thought telekinesis, in my dreams, I could see myself doing telekinesis. I could see myself like floating and then people being like, how do you do that? I'm like, it's easy. How do you not do it? Like, so I wanted to develop that skill. And I got a hold of one of Yuri Geller's books when I was about 9 or so. And that came with like guides for remote viewing, telekinesis, things like that.
Wow,
And so
man.
I've been practicing for a very long time.
That's very, yeah. I mean, obviously you had experiences, but still, even at that age, it's very young to be intellectually driven towards trying to find answers about stuff. A lot of kids that age might have just been like, oh, there's some weird dreams anyway, back to school. But you really kind of took note of it. And but you were in the middle of telling me a story, sorry, about you speaking with someone at the age of 10 in your meditation.
So that's when I really learned the whole like wants, don't wants, assumptions, expectations, the delusions of mankind, how we basically mankind has created every single thought pattern we follow. And
Wow.
most people only know what they've ever been shown. But what we were circling back to, I guess, was the idea of meditation and why I no longer so much practice that much. And because once you get to your golden spot, like your spot of perfect mind, body, spirit, you can return to it pretty easily every time. And that was something I was shown during that meditation was remember this, like remember this feeling, remember this vibration, remember this. This is you without delusion. Remember that. Okay, so like you can always return to your greatest vibration at will.
So you feel you can move into that state. You don't necessarily need to be waking up and doing meditation for an hour. You can move into that state quite easily.
Very easily. A lot of that's the theatrics at this point. And again, relating back to martial arts, like you don't have to do all these crazy stances and kiyas and stuff before you break the board. You can literally just walk up and break the board. You don't have to do all that crazy stuff before you connect to conscious beings. You're already connected. Like we're all already connected to the universe.
I think that's it, right? I mean, like things like meditation, these are they're tools and they're ways to step up and step up and step up. But eventually, once you've stepped up enough, you can just kind of click, fall straight into that kind of space. The only kind of correlation I have with that is when I was going out and doing this type of contact work and trying to make these contact situations occur, I was doing quite a bit of meditation at that point, and I've, like you, kind of fallen off of that. For my own reasons, though, I don't think I can get straight into my golden center. So that's not the reason I gave up. I just kind of, I'm just lazy and lack discipline. I need to sort myself out. But I have had those times where it's just been a few seconds and I've just slipped straight into that very calm, very open state and very energetically resonant. And it didn't take much effort. And that was, I think, because I was practicing meditation a lot. So it's one of those things where, yeah, after a while, you can take the stabilizers off, you can take the training wheels off, you don't need those things. The reason I wanted to bring up meditation was I was just going to ask you, have you ever actually tried to reach out to different intelligences, like the whole CE5 thing, or just through other types of methods? Is that something you've ever tried to do?
Yeah, I mean that's something I've definitely been working on since I was like, 9, 10 years old kind of thing. And it was not called CE5 back then. For me, it was just what it is. And it people are very unaware of the reality we live in. These beings are real. They exist. You could say the average human is very disconnected from reality, and they're very connected to man-made creations or man-made flows of space. And so as you remove delusions, it's just something that naturally happens. You'll hear the buzzing at 10:30 at night. You'll hear it at 2:30 in the morning. It's being connected to reality versus being connected to man-made creations. It's different, completely different.
Yeah, just removing those slices of false perception, and
All those spirals create
all those
distortions.
spirals.
Yeah, they create distortions within the flow of space. And so now if you have removed your spirals, that you're like pushing and distorting and pushing and distorting, you can align with that incoming flow, and now you're connected to the denser realms and you're connected to the less dense realms. It's a conscious awareness, and that's why I call it your line of sight, because your line of sight is literally how far you can see, but into time. So if I'm a, like I was mentioning earlier, like a drug addict, I can only see to my next fix, which is 30 minutes. Now, say I'm a college student, I have to finish college. I can only see to that 4-year degree kind of thing. It's literally how far into time you can see. And that translates straight back into seeing into the denser realms and seeing into the less dense realms. It's your level of connection to the universe.
So do you think like the denser realms, that's what like what people would call poltergeist phenomenon, maybe even demons and hauntings, and what would you categorize as lower?
Highly related. Yeah, I would say that there's that whole aspect of it, but then in the same sense, I think there's also the future of our of humanity is also there. And they somewhat overlap because the denser realm is the future now. Like if you wanted to think of the past and future of where our energy goes, energy will not, our entire universe will naturally drift into those denser realms. So that's like the future. But if you're pulling things out of this future now, they're most likely creations of human stillness. So when people say ultra-terrestrials and they say they're not sure if it's like a man from the future or if it's a being, like the future now is a denser realm, but that includes stuff like djinn. It includes the stuff like the demons and all that kind of stuff. They all exist within that same future now state.
Do you think that we're going to see in regards to like kind of the UFO situation, because obviously that's kind of like a facet of this challenge towards reality and what exactly is going on. Do you think that we're going to see at least things that might satisfy your level of curiosity coming from the US government, or do you think that we're going to have to expand out towards the scientific institutions?
I think that it already has come from people. For example, the conversation I had with Lou Elizondo, we ended up talking a lot about the whole concept of like the rusty beings being lifted up, recrystallized. But whether or not that's going to come out as like a sort of disclosure is a different story, and it seems dangerous in a way because it seems like that would be combining church and state. And it's a very slippery slope. At what point can we no longer discuss these things if they're not? Do you see what I'm saying? Because it seems to tie back into the Christianity. It seems to tie it back into
Oh, yeah.
Hinduism, Buddhism, all that stuff. This seems to be like very related, and so it's a fine line between church and state. And they were separated for good reason, right? I don't know, but I'm just like so. I don't think that a full disclosure will ever happen because of that, and that's potentially maybe why. And maybe right, just theory.
Of
Maybe
course.
why people like Lou and Sean Cahill are basically saying, look inside, love your family. They're trying to hint towards a certain direction, but they're not allowed to say, go believe in Jesus. You know what I'm saying? I'm just joking. But like, they're not allowed to say like religion is real. They can't say that.
Yeah, it's interesting though, because the religion like the Catholic Church is starting to become more involved in this. There's been different movements within modern religion towards trying to get people to open up to the idea that hey, actually maybe there is more than just the human species in God's creation. And it just kind of makes you think that there is a certain level of preparing people that's happening, not just in government, it's happening across multiple kind of different sectors, including religion. Do you think that it would be the religious populations that would be mostly affected by this? Because I feel like people maybe we underestimate what people will incorporate into their model. I mean, I know a lot of people who have religious backgrounds and views and truly are like faithful to their particular kind of religious architecture, but also are very open to the idea that there's life in the universe, are very open to the idea of things that would normally maybe be a bit challenging to the traditional religions. But in this modern world, I feel like people are way more ready for this kind of stuff. I don't think it would be as disruptive as they think it would be.
I think it people are very I think that people with religious backgrounds are closer to being prepared than like from the scientific world where they're like, whoa, 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 dimensions, whoa, beings from other dimensions, wait, there's different types of beings. Like they're gonna be completely lost because our physics, all our math is only within our dimension. It doesn't include any other dimensions.
Which, to be fair, kind of it's almost a religion in of itself. I mean, it's a different
It
type of
is.
religion, but it is a lot of it is faith-based.
Yeah, no, and it becomes very dogmatic too. Like, where if you don't put the answer that the teacher wants to hear down, you're not going to get the A, and so you can't pass the test. If your research project doesn't line up with currently accepted stuff, you're not going to get the funding. That whole thought process translates everywhere. Yeah, as far as religions, I don't. The danger, I guess, in quotes, it would be like, so which religion was right? I don't know. And that's where it's like, they're all right, you know.
They're all right and wrong.
Exactly. They're all. That's why for me, it's always been more of like morals and stories and just what kind of vibe am I getting from it? How does it interact with my heart, kind of thing. I don't take it as these exact events happened. It's more morals that I get from them. And they all seem to relate in the same sense as like demons exist in the religions, jinn exist in the religions, and then you have like angels exist in the religions. It's funny that it got brought up because I was talking about that quite a bit last night in one of the Twitter spaces. We went into that whole thing, and for me, and that circles back to what the original question. I don't think that governments can disclose something in the format of it being a religion, but they can disclose it in the format of it being like energetically spiritual. So like, but then that itself, like you're just saying, science is already becoming its own dogmatic religion. That already creates another religion now, if you don't follow this scientific theory of the densities, you know. That's where everybody has to look inward, and truth is only what's true to you. You know, like I have my truth, you've got yours, someone else has theirs. And it comes to like understanding. We need to be understanding of each other, and accepting and talk, you know.
I
Harmony,
agree. I agree,
right?
man. I agree. That's what really matters the most, especially now in a world where there's a lot of a lot of projected fear and division towards each of us as we're kind of tuning into the news or looking at our Twitter feeds. And I think something that I try and talk to at least with most of my guests is that really by having these conversations, we're just trying to push a little bit more of that good vibe out there in different ways. And I think that's what I appreciate about what you're trying to do, because and no offense to all of the crystal hippies out there, because I'm a crystal hippie at heart. But
I've
there's
got my crystals.
exactly, dude. I've
Okay.
got one hanging up over there, so there's no lack of crystals in my life. But it's what I'm saying is there's plenty of people out there kind of saying this kind of stuff about higher dimensional awakening of the next state of human consciousness, and it's sometimes hard for people to digest it because it's coming maybe from that very spiritual perspective, and not everyone has that type of perceptual lens on reality. So having people like you coming in and being like, look, here's some sort of framework for what I think are the principles involved in these things that you think are woo-woo, that you think are spiritual. There is a component, there is a mechanic here at play. There is some way in which we can make a model out of this. And I think that that is your best attempt to, that's your attempt through the way you've come up through learning of bringing in love, of bringing in positivity and bringing in unity. It's through, right, let me try and explain this in the language that people understand, in this modern world.
Yeah, I've been primarily promoting innovation, education, and sustainability because I think a lot of people just don't ever really get the education, right? People only know what they've ever been shown. And so it's important for people to have access to information. Let me just put it that way. And like if electrogravitics isn't being taught, if all these other things aren't being taught and they're already like categorized as woo, I think it's hard to remove those stigmas. And as far as like the disclosure process, it seems like there's been a hand-holding of society. So, and it's a very strategic process. Like let's walk people step by step to a point where we're still within the boundaries of their accepted thinking. Now we pause. Now we hold their hand again. We're going to walk them more. And I think that's what's been happening with this whole process is the slow hand-holding process of disclosure.
Yeah, I would agree, and I would say that one of the recent steps forward was Gary Nolan's interview with Tucker Carlson. Did you get a chance to watch that?
Yeah, I thought that was awesome. They spent a whole hour on national television talking about UAP and this, physiological effects of them. I
Yeah,
think that's important. Yeah.
and I mean they got, deeper into some more interesting ideas. Maybe these are multidimensional. Maybe this is about not understanding our reality properly. That was not the discussion that was happening a year or 2 years ago on CNN and Fox News. It was more like, well, maybe they're Russian, or maybe they're Chinese, or maybe they're this and that. So it is that step by step, and there are players moving around on this chessboard right now. Gary
Oh,
Nolan
yeah.
is one of those people. People are being used in a strategic way to kind of start this like step by step process. So I also think that the Admiral Wilson documents are going to be a part of that. That's my belief, is that that's another kind of layer to the narrative, is that that's going to eventually be brought out, that those are legitimate leaks. But no, it's certainly a step by step process, and I think that we're in a really interesting time, and I think that people like you are making it even more interesting with these types of ideas. So just want to, thank you for doing what you're doing, my man.
Right on, right on. And just to go off that a little bit, I think Hal Puthoff just put out a paper too.
Ultra terrestrials, yeah. Well, it's a paper that he's had for a while, but it's been published, I think, now in a quite big institution.
Yeah, and I mean, you got institutes like the Galileo Project over at Harvard. I think that there's been a lot of big steps that have been made in the last couple of years. Very fantastic. It's very awesome to me because I've been trying to work this out for a very long time, and I haven't really had any help, honestly. And then I spoke with Lou, and now Lou has connected me to Avi Loeb, passed my work along. And I've spoken with Avi now. I've spoken with like other researchers and stuff, and everything seems to line up pretty good.
And you're feeling like people are taking interest, these people that you're being connected to, they're taking an interest in your perspective on this.
Yes. Yeah, totally. It seems to tie everything back to almost, and the closest thing that I've found that has existed already now is the concept of a yuga. Do you know what I'm talking about there?
Do you want to explain it a little bit for everyone?
Well, the way I might not have the best explanation, but like basically precessional cycles cause tugging of conscious perceptions. It's like literally where my work has taken me to when I first mapped out the circadian rhythm in that dimension of conscious density. And you see that consciousness is like a gyroscope hanging on a string at a 90-degree angle. But that's only when you consider the brain waves of delta to fast gamma, and you put those spheres in tidal locking. But when you expand the other spheres of conscious perception out all the way and in all the way, there's dimensional alignments within that tidally locked fluid. And so we have one that is a day. That's our 24 hours. We have one that is 185 days. That translates closest to being half a year. And then we have one that's about 2,029 to 2,178 years, which relates to the ages of Pisces, Aquarius, the 25,900 year precessional cycle broken up into 12. It seems to relate to that one. And during those moments, like, human consciousness gets tugged. And I've also kind of heard people saying like stuff like Christ consciousness type stuff being, coming back. And well, that's what happens when we go into these less dense realms, is potentially that spirit, soul, anything type of thing like that that's being introduced into a human body is literally coming from those less dense realms, because that's where we're existing at that moment in time. We're existing within a less dense realm. So a human being born would have that type of flow. That would be like the type of conscious experience that gets injected into that body. So I call it the dipping of a golden chain, is what I've come to realize, is that during this conscious procession, if we all have our interdimensional alignments, that essentially creates what's called the golden chain. And so that gets dipped into human perception and somewhat recrystallizes all of human consciousness and perception to the point where we harmonize more as one being. And that goes back all the way to that whole convergent moment concept, a recrystallization of human consciousness based off of precessional cycles.
See, I feel like I have done a good I feel like I've done a good job of traversing this with you, but like there are just moments where I'm sitting there, I'm like, I don't think I'm smart enough to be having this conversation right now.
Yeah.
Just flying off. I love it because, like, I'm sure there will be people out there that are nodding their head, like, I absolutely get this. And I'm sitting there, like, I'm really trying. I'm trying my best. I understand what you're saying to a certain degree, but then you're kind of losing me a little in the verbiage.
It's so hard to describe. I mean, we're trying to discuss creation, right? I mean, like, what word am I even supposed to use there? I've tried so hard not to use words like God and certain words that have like so much stigma behind them, you know? But it's like, I've had to define my own words. I defined the word space preparation. Like, that's the concept. It's a theory, the theory of space preparation, how empty space prepares itself before matter can even manifest within it. To go off that, I had to define the light state, which I don't know if it's the same light state theory that Pius has now put out in his patents and stuff, but I had light state theory written out in my first book, Your Influence in Space, and it was on display at the Air and Space Museum in 2014. And that's the book that the guy from Bullet Technologies bought 20 copies of. So I know that I independently made light state theory. But
Very cool.
it might already exist within the literature, is all I'm going to say, because discoveries happen simultaneously across the globe. So
Of
someone
course.
else might have come up with that, and he might have heard it from somewhere else. But then to go off that, like the crystal concept, the human consciousness all being one crystal, I feel like, and when I speak about this stuff, sometimes people are like, you know who you sound like right now? And they're like, the Maharishi, or Deepak Chopra, or like the Bashyam Tov. So it seems like it really does tie back into like mysticism of, you know, in some sort, but also where science is going right now too, which is super fascinating to me. I mean,
Dude, this is what fascinates me, even as someone who's like, not really that scientifically literate. It just seems to me that the most ancient teachings that have been kind of echoed throughout history, which are usually very basic things like we're all one, we're all connected, all things are love, et cetera, this is where science is now starting to get, the spirit and the science are getting closer and closer. And my God, I really want to know what happens when they combine properly.
and that's where I'm at right now, is the book I'm writing is called Mind, the Shifter and Reorganizer of Nodes. And I've come to a point where I think I came across the foundation of prayer. It's like, wait, is this how prayer actually works physically?
Go on then,
You
break that down real quick.
know? Oh man, okay. The easiest way to think of it is we only experience the waking universe, right, our physical reality. We only experience that when we're in an alpha, beta, and slow gamma state of consciousness. When you map out the circadian rhythm, we all have our own circadian rhythms, but a circadian rhythm of a human that is properly tuned to Earth follows this pattern. Basically, we'll start from midnight. At midnight, you're in your delta waves. At 2:30 in the morning, you hit the theta field. At about 6 a.m., you hit the alpha field, and then at about 8 or 9 a.m., you start switching between alpha and beta. But then again, you go back into alpha towards the end, and then you hit theta again around 10:30 p.m., and then back into delta. Point being is that each one of those harmonics, all those resonances, occur at specific distances away from the center of time, based off of that dimension of conscious density. And so what you notice is that our center of influence, meaning our perception, hits theta at 10:30 at night. That's a different realm. That's like literally the incoming energy of our next days. Because if energy is in a black hole, it spirals to the center. And if we're only awake and perceiving reality in alpha, beta, and slow gamma, that's inside here. But delta and theta are out here. So the energy of our awake state hits delta, theta, and then comes into alpha, beta, slow gamma. As far as our quantum ability to conscious ability to interact with these fields. So quite literally, our dream state energy affects the energy of creation before it hits our awake state. And so there's specific times when we hit certain fields. So 10:30 at night, we're tucking into the theta field. 2:30 at morning, we're breaking through that theta field again. And so it's like, is that the witching hour? Is that how the witching hour works? Are we consciously interacting with this field of energy at 2:30 in the morning, this theta realm? And as we're tucking into this delta realm, are we interacting again? But in a different way. So the energy is spiraling inwards. When you're going towards delta, you're swimming upstream. You're going against the natural flow. But when you're going towards the denser realms, you're going with the flow. So there's two different moments we hit that theta. One is against the flow, one is with the flow. So basically 10:30 at night, it's time to listen, is what I've come to realize. That's like when it's time to listen to, you're supposed to unpack, get rid of your delusions, pack in with the natural flow of the faucet of creation. 2:30 in the morning, it's almost like when you can hop on a surfboard and ride those waves. You know, because you can't, a surfer can't, they like avoid the waves when they're surfing out to the ocean, you know, but then when the wave comes, they hop on their board and they ride it back to the beach. So like while paddling out into delta, tuck, remove delusions, tuck into delta, have a very lucid dream. While you're in that state of lucidity, that's when you can start affecting those waves and you can ride them all the way into wake state. And so that's what I've come to realize is literally it's like the foundation of prayer, because they do it at night and they do it in the morning, and then it goes on. Yeah. It seems like this whole thought process really leads into prayer, which is so interesting to me.
What is, I mean, I do find it interesting that some of my most kind of what feel like intuitively inspired ideas do come to me around the 2 to 3 o'clock in the morning time period, where I'll be like struggling to sleep maybe, and there'll be an idea in my head and I'll write down a sentence, and then suddenly I'm just writing paragraphs, just, you know, and I'm not even thinking about it. And then like, that'll be like a, you know, 3 pages of my thoughts around why consciousness does this, that or the other, or something along those lines. And it makes me think, oh, maybe that is exactly it. You're moving into a theta state. You're moving into a more expanded state. You're gaining access to perhaps more expanded levels of information. It's coming to you through what people would call, you know, the Akashic records or the infinite pool of experience and awareness. You know, these are the words we use, but information, data, energy, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way I see it. It's like, we live in an information matrix. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying we're in the matrix, but I'm not saying we're in a simulation. I'm saying that there's layers of information that exist at different distances away. And our alpha, beta, slow, gamma is tuned to the physical world. Our delta and theta is tuned to the non-physical world that interacts with the energy before hitting our wake state. But then also fast gamma is being able to interact with the future beings. So I think that that's our clue. Brain harmony and like experience. I think those are the clues that we have in order to actually explore this further. Yeah, like those are the big hints.
Man, this has been such a cool chat, dude. We're probably gonna have to wrap up just because it's getting a little bit late on my side. Otherwise, I'd say let's just keep going. But we might have to link up again to have another talk about this, because I enjoy this, because I feel like there's a level where I'm like, right, I'm with you, and I feel like I love this idea and I'm trying to run with it. And then I'm falling out of knowing because you've just got a little bit more of that kind of scientific background and ways of explaining it. So I feel like I need repeat sessions with you, bro.
Let's do it. Let's do it. And for anyone watching, I know it's hard to describe densities of creation verbally, right? So I have drawings of all this kind of stuff, like energy drifting into the center of a black hole, meanwhile hitting different layers of perception, distorting realities. I've got all this stuff kind of drawn out, mapped out. And then the math is there too. So we can definitely go into more detail for sure on another day, you know.
And your books, they're all available on online, Amazon, stuff like that?
Yeah, they're all at luciuslabs.com.
Awesome.
Yep. You can spell that and we'll put a link in there or something, you know.
Yeah. No, for everyone listening, there'll be links in the description box below for Lucius Labs and all of Alexei's work, and obviously a link to his YouTube channel and his social media. So I'd encourage you to check it out, be a subscriber, follow him, because, I mean, come on, this is interesting stuff. And he's coming at it from a perspective that not many people come at it from, you know, where it's like, let's try and articulate these very difficult, very esoteric things in a way that's more translatable to scientists. At the end of the day, they're the people we need to try and convince these things. It's not the spiritual people. They're already on that level. So we need to try and get to the kind of reductionists and the hardcore analytical minds of our society, because you know, you need to kind of approach it with the right framework depending on the kind of person you're speaking with. And if you're talking to scientists, you need to talk science. So I think that what you're doing is great, and I'm in full support of it, and I encourage people to check you out. And I just want to say thank you again, because this has been a really cool and enlightening conversation.
Right on, man. Thank you for having me. I appreciate that.